What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. Welcome, listeners. It is great to have you back for this episode of Hitting Your Stride, which is brought to you today by Equestrian Elements Life Coaching. Some of you who follow Equestrian Elements Life Coaching on social media may have seen that back in the beginning of March, I had the wonderful opportunity to be a guest on the Dressage Radio podcast, discussing what life coaching is and its benefits. The Dressage Radio Show is the world's premier and longest running podcast about the world of dressage and the official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation. Today, I have with me the two hosts of this world-leading podcast. Welcome, Reese Koffler-Stanfield and Philip Parks.
Hi.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Well, thank you. Yes, this is awesome. I am so grateful to have had the chance to be on your podcast. And it is even more of an honor to have you both in your busy schedules to take the time to chat with me today. So thank you so much for being here. Now, Reese, this is just our second time meeting. So I am looking forward to this and getting a chance to know you better. And Philip, you and I have known each other for about 3 years now. I can't believe that. And I massage a number of the horses you have in training. And of course, I have to say it, we love talking about the Blue Jays. Sometimes.
Yeah, baseball is a little bit of a side passion hobby.
Yeah, conversation piece.
Yeah. Anybody who knows about sports, I can usually talk on you know, one of the Toronto teams at least.
And exactly. Yeah. All right. So let's get started with each of you sharing a little bit about yourselves and your riding careers. How about Reese? We start with you.
Sure. Well, it's super fun to be here tonight. Thank you so much for having us. We were talking. So we do our podcast as an audio. So it's actually funny to see Phil on camera. I'm actually the shy one when it comes to the camera. I'm like, oh no. So it's fun to be here tonight. So yes, I'm based in Georgetown, Kentucky. I am a USDF bronze, silver, and gold medalist, and I am a USDF FEI certified instructor. So mostly my business is teaching and horses in training. I have two very lovely horses right now that I'm competing. My younger one is a 9-year-old Westphalian gelding by Feedback, and he's showing small tours. So pre-St. George, I won.
Okay.
And I have a lovely international horse competing at the international level. His name is Bingo.
That's a fun name.
he is just as fun and such a kind soul. We acquired Bingo about a year ago now, and we just came off the Florida season, my first time being back in the international ring. Which was quite an interesting and fun and exhilarating and all the feelings event that we did this year. So kind of looking forward to competing him for the rest of the year and onwards at the international level.
Awesome. So how long has it been since you were in the international ring that you and Bingo got back into it?
11 years.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had a wonderful horse. His name was Gubergs Casper. Yeah. And I was younger. It was right around the time Philip and I met, kind of. It was 2006 when I started competing him. And I competed him. He finished fourth in the US in 2009. So that was quite fun. That was life changing. And he won a leading American horse at a CDIW. So it opened my eyes to international competition.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I think when you compete at that level, when I was younger, I didn't necessarily think about that it wouldn't happen again, or that the challenges that would be to be back in the ring. And Phil has been a huge part also of my career with horses and helping me guide that. But, you know, I trained a couple horses that didn't quite make the international Grand Prix ring. They were Grand Prix horses, but they were sold or when we lost. So you don't really think, it takes years to train these horses. And I didn't think it would take me 11 years to get back there, but I was really, to be back in the ring was so cool. And I appreciated it differently as a 40-year-old person than I did in my 20s.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Like I was just thinking, you know, we can get into this later on as we talk about with some of these questions I have for you guys, but you know, you're a different person. Like you are a different person 11 years later than you were when you first entered. So that's a totally different experience for you. Yeah, that's cool. Really
different events. Cool.
All right, Philip, how about you? Share with the audience a little bit about you.
Yeah, well, I've been competing in dressage almost all my life. I think I was 12 years old when I entered my first dressage competition. And, you know, from there, through my teens, you know, riding, training, going to school. But, you know, after I graduated high school, I went over to Holland to do kind of a working student program. I spent over a year there learning a lot, getting tons of exposure and tons of riding lessons. And so when I returned, I started my business as, you know, as a dressage trainer, coach, rider, you know, kind of all the things. You know, you wear a lot of hats when you're in the business, you know. So, you know, I've been doing that. I have, you know, just fantastic experiences with people and horses. I'm still waiting for my special, you know, international horse and all of that. But I mean, numerous breeds, ages, levels of horses that I've had a lot of experience. But you know, sort of early on, I was a lot braver, and I was specializing in doing young horse stuff and, you know, bringing along those guys. I've backed, I can't even count how many horses in my life. And so, you know, on our podcast, Reese and I, she's a little bit the upper level experienced FEI trainer, and I'm kind of the young horse specialist. And you know, that's what makes it work. Is that we both are bringing a little bit of a different thing to our show when we have to give riding tips and when we have to talk about, you know, different horses. I've, you know, like I said, a little bit more experience. Well, I mean, Reese has too, you know, like different breeds, which helps people out when they send us questions and we can bring a lot to the show between, you know, the two of us and our, I guess, combined probably 40 or 50 years of experience in training and teaching. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Yeah. I mean, like each of you shared, you know, your expertise or what your strengths are, you know, as riders, you know, you've got the great foundational moments. And like, you know, Philip, I mentioned, I've known you for 3 years. As I'm there working on three or four horses, I'm watching and observing. And I, you know, I said to you before we got recording this podcast, I mean, I've always noticed you're so grounding and very, you know, quiet, and it's nothing like but confidence boosting for these horses. And you know, and Reese, if like I said, I don't know you, but I've been doing some checking out, and and yeah, like, you know, there's that when you experience, I can only imagine, like being in that ring, like there's a whole element of not entertainment, but like the energy that goes into it and preparing your mindset for that.
Putting on a performance. That's what Reese
Yes.
It's a show. It's at the end of the day. And that's what, you know, we have to tell. And we talk on our podcast and we work with our students. You know, there's a big difference between training a horse and showing a horse. And you really have to think about that. You're in the ring training every day. You're going for different goals. But if your goal is to horse show, sometimes you have to just really pay attention to where you're gaining points, you're losing points. We had a little horse show in about an hour from my house yesterday. And it's so funny because one of my long-term students, I couldn't be there. I had to bring my horse home and go back. And she said, I'm glad I have a second shot at the score. And I said, I'm coming, I'll be there. And I said, but make sure you have your test for me. And it was funny because I looked at it and I said, all you have to do is improve the ring back. And if you can just improve one thing, which was a double score and hit her in a few boxes, you'll get the score. And she said, okay. And it also improved her confidence in general. But that's the difference between what we do as sort of show coaches and our daily work.
Yes. Awesome. Such a cool balance and necessary. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah. So talking about your podcast and the elements that you two bring together, how did two dressage riders, one from Kentucky and the other one from Guelph, Ontario, find themselves hosting North America's leading podcast discussing anything and everything about dressage?
Well, it's a funny story because we've been doing it for 8.5 years now. So, yeah. So Phil and I, you know, we were podcasters before podcasting was podcasting.
Before podcasting was cool. So like you guys are.
Yeah, before it was cool.
Or anyone even knew what it was.
Or anybody knew what it was. I am not techie at all. So it's actually quite funny because Phil, that's why even when we got on, he's like, you do this sound this way. So we actually work for the Horse Radio Network. So, which is a fantastic network. It has been, and Phil could tell you the stats a lot better, but it's one of the leading podcast networks in the world because it started so early.
Wow.
And our boss, Glenn Hubert, started it. And I met Glenn and Jennifer at I live in Lexington, Kentucky. So we have a lot of horse events, and especially sort of leading up to the World Equestrian Games, there were a lot of events that were happening. And I met Glenn and Jen at an Alltech, and it was like a meet and greet. And I was a speaker there, and they listened to me speak, and they invited me to come on the Horse Radio Network. And I didn't know what that meant. Like, you'll be interviewed. And so I started doing a spot on some of their shows, and I did a Cooking with Reese segment, funny enough. Because one of my passions, I have a wonderful husband, and Beau has a wonderful wife, Meredith. She's great. And I like to cook. And so it's sort of one of my hobbies. And so I would come on and do recipes with Reese. So ironic.
Fun.
And I did that for about a year. And I had a fire alarm go off once, actually. I was trying to multitask. And Glenn's like, is that your fire alarm? I was like, yeah, it is. Yep.
That's how you know Reese is cooking, right?
I was cooking. So when the Dressage Radio Show, the host left, and Glenn approached me and said, would you think about doing this? And we have a standing joke that I said I would do it for 3 months. That was it. I don't know how I came up with 3 months, but I was like, I'll do it for 3 months. I can't commit to anything more. And he said, all right. And so then we started looking for co-hosts that would work, because, you know, as you know, when you have a partner on a podcast, it has to work. The chemistry has to work, and playing off of each other has to work. So I had a couple co-hosts, and I had a female, and it didn't work very well. I think we did 3 or 4 sort of episodes.
Hard to tell the difference in the people if the voices are too similar.
True.
Yeah. It doesn't work. And
it's audio only, right?
Yeah. And I think you also need two people that will kind of play off each other. So Phil and I are very similar in our training, very similar, actually. But we will differ every once in a while. We'll banter back and forth a little bit. And Phil, when did we meet? We met at the Young Dressage Horse Trainers Conference that would happen for 10 years in Maryland.
I was thinking about that. I think it was started in 2004 or something like that.
Yeah. And Phil and I, we were in the initial group of trainers that went, and we just, from the beginning, when we first met each other, we were like, I was like, this guy's great. He's super cool. We have similar thoughts.
You gotta have jokes. You gotta not take yourself too seriously. That's what I like about Reese.
I mean, we can laugh. I mean, we have now gone all over the world together. We've gone to big events, and you really have to have somebody that's, you know, I call it, the joke is he's my work husband. My work husband, you know, and I mean, he'll call me out on stuff, like, and you need that. You need somebody that will sort of, you know, he'll make fun of me, I'll make fun of him. Phil's great at the, I'm actually a little shy, funny enough. I would be more the extroverted person, but I won't ask like super hard questions, and Phil just like jump in there. I'm like,
oh. Yeah, I'm like the opposite. Reese likes to talk a lot, and like I kind of, you know, put a lot of thought into things, and then like, I really want to know this, and it doesn't matter who's on the show. I'll ask him, you know, what can they say, right? So
yeah,
putting a little bit the guests on the spot, but I want to kind of keep it interesting. So, you know,
he's the best. I won't do that. I'm much more. I actually have a master's in diplomacy, funny enough, in international commerce. Yeah, so I will play the diplomat role. Like I'm like, oh, I don't want to. And Phil will ask a great question. I'm like, oh, good job, what, Phil? That was great. So kind of going back to the original question, Philip and I had met at these conferences. We'd done like 2 or 3 years together, and we just always had a great friendship and liked kind of sitting together and chatting about training horses. So I called him and I said, hey, Phil, I've got this thing going on. And he said, okay.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I like to be kind of a yes guy, like, you know, the go with guy. You know, I don't like to say no, and you know, whatever it is, I'm up for it, right? So Reese says, oh, you know, I'm gonna do this podcast. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm in.
Well, it's like that saying, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Exactly. And Hugh, we would have never imagined sort of what we've been able to do, like, and continue to try to move forward. You would never imagine. And so thankfully Philip said yes. But I will tell you, if you go back and listen to our first episodes, they are terrible. They are. They're so
No one's gonna be good at something right away, but no. At least Glenn was like, Glenn was like, I think this could work. You guys, you know, yeah. Keep at it. You know, we had maybe a few thousand, few thousand listeners, or you know, like 1,000 listeners or something. I mean, he knows all the numbers, and we don't really track all that. We just keep doing the show. But
you told me, I asked, so like, how many listeners might, you know, the episode I was on might get? And I think Phil, you told me like 15,000.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an average. It grew and grew, and as people, and now that, you know, unfortunately, it's the one of the good outcomes of the pandemic is podcasts are huge.
Yeah.
And people know what they are, and they know where to get them, and they, you know, like, we don't have to explain, you know, what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, when we try to book guests and things like that, it's now very, you know, people understand it's very easily, you know, easy to do, and that kind of thing. So.
Cool. So, yeah. So let me ask you then just a little bit more about this before we move on to the next question. Because, you know, after, what is it, like 612, 13 episodes or something you guys have done?
14, I think we did 614 last week.
Yeah, like, and you've been doing this for 8 years. How do you keep it fresh? And how do you, you know, give what the audience might be sort of wanting on a continuum that might change?
Go ahead. It's a good question. It's a continual conversation between Phil and I on how do we keep it fresh? Who should we have on? Content whenever you're doing a podcast is a huge deal, especially because dressage, you know, sometimes you're like, how many times can you tell someone how to? Amazingly, a lot. And partly what we do is communicate, right? So our show is we will have guests come on and talk about a certain topic, or if they are competing well, or it's somebody that we find interesting. Phil and I are always tracking that, and we're always doing that. So it becomes sort of easier in a way. I think you have to know, as a podcaster, you do have to keep it interesting and you do have to innovate. So, you know, I was watching the Today Show one day and there was a book club, and I was like, hey, Phil, there's a book club. We should start a book club. So we started a book club, and content is a huge deal because, you know, we have to fill a show. We now do three times a month. Western Dressage has the other, and that's nice for us because when we're competing or we're out, we can shift around the show a little bit. It gives us a little bit of time off. But that's been great. So we are constantly looking for things like that. Like, oh, this is kind of cool. We should do that. Or let's do a segment on this. Mm-hmm. And that helps a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, we've drawn inspiration from different media. You know, the Dressage Today, it used to be a magazine. Now it's an online magazine. But, you know, they've given us great ideas on training tips or people to talk to. Like Reese said, you know, just normal media or sports radio have interesting topics. They're not dressage, obviously, but they can be modified. We try to modify different ideas from everywhere. We're just always, you know, like you have that little thing in your head that says, oh, that would be great for, you know, how do we make that work for our show? How do we make that work as a podcast idea? And then just people, like, you're just like, oh, who could we talk to? And then, you know, people who we try to book as guests are like, oh, I have nothing to say, or I'm not interesting, or, you know, what are we going to talk about? And, you know, normally the first 3 or 4 minutes, they're a little hesitant. I mean, maybe they've done a podcast now, or they haven't, or they've spoken to, you know, to a room and during a convention or something like that. And then you just get them going. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by 20 minutes, it's like, okay, we've got enough, you know, like, it's okay, you know. But when you get people talking about what they're passionate about, you can't stop them.
Yeah.
And that's great, you know. And you know, if you know a lot of horse people, that's exactly it, right? They'll talk and talk and talk because, yeah, they love it. So,
yeah. Awesome. So, okay. So let's get into some horse stuff here.
I don't know anything about horses.
Having the two of you
get us talking about horses, we won't stop.
We won't stop. Yeah.
Okay. Let's try to keep some control here, you two. Okay. So what is one piece of advice you were given that helped you become the rider you are today? Philip, let's start with you.
I don't know if I got a really good piece of advice when I was doing that. And I was learning about the business end, and I was learning about riding and, you know, a little bit of everything. And I, you know, great hosts, great teachers. And I was, you know, kind of just, I was at 20 years old, 19 or 20. And I was just like, oh, everywhere, like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, take all this knowledge and you know, and they're like, well, what are you gonna do for money? And I was like, what? No, I'm just gonna ride horses, and I'm gonna compete here, I'm gonna compete there, and I'm gonna be champion of this and that. And no, you have to kind of, you know, have an idea about how to turn this into a business. And their advice was like, you're going to need to have to learn to teach. I was like, I'm not good at that. I don't really want to do that. And they're like, if you're in this business, you have to teach lessons. That's the only way to bring income, you know? And I was like, okay. So they really helped me to do that. And then throughout, you know, my experience is like, you need to know how to do everything.
Okay.
So yes, they kind of started me off with not just riding. Okay, now I can work on teaching a little bit. I'll get some clients that way. And then, oh, Reese and I, we're doing this side hustle, this podcast. And then what else can you do? You know, like, I think that's what that little chunk of advice, you know, has built on to, like I said before, to just be the yes guy.
Nice.
Do everything, you know. There's no mistake in trying and not being good at something, or trying and figuring out how to be good at something. You know, so
that's awesome.
That's what I learned. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see that being very good teaching advice as you you know, give that to your students. Yeah. Yeah. Reese, how about you? What was the piece of advice that you've carried with you?
Oh gosh, I'm kind of with Phil. I mean, we get lots of advice, and I would completely agree with him. Is in this business, you have to be good at a lot of things, but at the end of the day, we're communicators. I think that's why our podcast is well received. I think both Phil and I teach a lot. I think that's part of the reason we're well received is we have to be good communicators. And I think when you're a communicator, you also have to continue working on being a good communicator. So I think coming in with that, our producer, we about a year ago, we got a new producer, and his name is Paul. And Paul's actually like a true producer. And so he doesn't let us get away with, how would you say?
Like
he won't let us flub. Like he is much, he's brought us. And I think that's been really good for us.
And so I think I agree with Phil. If you want to do a business in horses, you have to be good at a lot of things. And I think that's why, and it doesn't necessarily mean you need to be a trainer. I think Phil and I went out early to be trainers. You know, I went the certification route and in the US and got certified and pushed myself. I think it was around 2004. I did my fourth level USCF certification. And then I finished my FEI certification 2 years ago. And that was hard. That was pushing. Like, I didn't need to do it per se, but I thought, you know, this is available. I should do it. And that was really difficult. But I'm with Phil. I don't like to look back and think, gosh, I really should have done X in life. I like to have said, I tried. And if it didn't work or it failed or whatever. And the same thing with riding, you know, at some level, stirrups are adjustable. You know, you're not out here doing it. I am. And it's hard. Yeah. I think the riding advice. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say what you two are describing is that's personal development. That's, you know, and happening in the, no pun intended, the arena of riding. You know, oftentimes we think the personal development or, you know, how we go about the rest of our lives happens outside that. But, you know, what happens in the ring as you're learning about yourself and Reese, like you said, testing yourself. It was really hard, but you thought, you know, what if I don't do this? Like, are you going to be able to live with yourself? You're not going to feel, you know, good about it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's the same as when we give coaching advice or how to train a horse advice is like, you're not going to progress if you stay in the comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we try to do, you know, I try to do things that are like out of the comfort zone and, you know, educational opportunities. I love to learn and I love to learn different ways of doing the same thing. And I think that's kind of a dressage skill, right? Like, we all know the moves. There's only, I don't know how many, 15 of them or whatever it is, 23 moves, but there's an infinite way to do them. So, you know, get out of your comfort zone, find what works, find what doesn't work. And you only are going to get experience by doing it.
You know? Yeah. Cause every horse is different.
Every horse is different. Yeah. And I think, again, that's one of the benefits we get. You know, sometimes you see, when we started the podcast, I would never have thought we would have gone to how many World Cup, 2 or 3 World Cups. We've gone to the World Equestrian Games. Like, we've been able, we go to a lot of educational events because we're press, we're media. So we're able to go and cover these events, but they're hidden benefits. So we can pretty much go and say, oh, we want to go here. And now we're pretty much able to do that. And so that pushes us. And then, you know, Phil and I are like, what do you think? What should we do? Who should we talk to? Should we have this person on? and we get that opportunity and we get to talk. You never know.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, kind of hidden opportunities in whatever that you do that you don't appreciate at the time that you sign up to do it. And then all of a sudden it's just like, it's not what you thought it would be. Or, you know, or you can make it what you want, you can own it. And that's just been a really great experience.
I love this.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Look what you guys are doing like 8 years later. You're on Hitting Your Stride.
I know. It's so cool.
It's fun. It's really fun. Yeah. Oh my God. I just love the connections that we're able to make and, you know, the friends that we're able to.
Yeah.
To meet and to open our community up to different people and that I think that's what it's about, like horse riding, dressage, whatever, it doesn't matter what it is, if you can open up your personal circle to more people and it's so fun. It's so fun.
It's really fun.
Okay, so how, now I know this show season and last show season, everything's all a little crazy and different, but let's not focus on that. Let's just talk about the general approach here. So how do you both prepare yourself for a show season and how do you balance the different elements of your preparation? Reese, do you want to go first?
Sure. I can kind of just share a little bit about sort of getting Bingo ready for international competition, because, you know, I'm in North America, and our shows did continue. So our national championship got canceled last fall. I chose not to go to the regional finals because it was in St. Louis and I wasn't comfortable with the travel. So, but we did compete a little bit last year. So Phil wasn't able to compete. And I was able to compete, and then we were in Florida, and there were precautions and there were no spectators in Florida in the Florida season, but we were able to compete. So we were lucky that way. So we kind of kept rolling on. Bingo came in May last year. And one of the things, it's a little bit, I'm actually fairly private, funny enough, about my team. So Phil is very much part of my team. And it's like Phil, my sister, my coach, the owner of the horse, and then my team of vets and massage therapists, but it's pretty small. I don't take a lot of outside advice. And I think that's actually important. Mm-hmm. And there are a few people that I very much pay attention and listen to and trust, and know at the end of the day, they have my best interest. And sometimes it's hurtful. It's not hurtful, but I don't want them to always tell me I'm great. Like, I need somebody to come in and tell me exactly what it needs to be said. So I, again, keep it pretty, I'm pretty targeted with my social media. I don't put everything on social media until I'm ready. I think that's part of it too. You know, not a lot of people knew I had this horse. And that was on purpose, because I didn't want to come out and have this huge expectation. I wanted to come out and be able to hit each target. Hmm. So my coach, Scott Hassler, Phil and I have worked with Scott for years, and he was great. He flew up every 3 weeks during the pandemic. And so it was great, because he said, okay, in 3 weeks, I'll hit this target. In 3 weeks, hit this target. Sometimes he'd be coming two or four, it depended, but he was pretty regular. And then my sister is here in Lexington. And so she competed Young Riders and also rides Grand Prix. So she's my great eyes on the ground. So she also came quite often. So we decided in December to be ready to sort of show the Grand Prix. So I think it's always important to find your goal and work backwards.
Okay.
So that you have each target thing to hit. So we said in December, I'd never taken him on a trailer because there was nowhere to really go really with Bingo. So, you know, in December, I did some just field trips, getting him on the trailer, taking him to my coach's farm, a couple other farms. So I knew what he'd be like. I had had a horse before that kind of hurt my confidence a little bit. So I really was working on getting that back. Which was good, because I understand how people have anxiety and fear. So I had to work a little bit on that. So it was really important that everything went well. And then I went to the next, and it wasn't like, I'm going to come out in the international ring and be on live stream all over the world. It wasn't that. And then we decided, okay, in January, we would do some national shows. Again, at Global, there were no spectators this year. And for me, that was great, because I was working through things. It was a lot of firsts with Bingo. It was my first time in the ring. It was my first Grand Prix. It was my first special. It was my first freestyle.
Oh, yeah. And
firsts are hard, you know, firsts bring out anxiety. So in my opinion, so I needed to kind of chip away at the first. And we did. And we would hit a target, and it was like, okay, we would all kind of get back together and look at the tests and look what we needed to work on. And then we would work on that. And then we'd go again. And then all the way to when we went into the international ring in February, which I felt by the time we got there, I felt pretty good. It was still a first and it was still a big first, but it was great. And then we did one other CDI. And so each time got better and better. So it was great, but it was very much a very planned. I'm pretty, Phil can tell you, like, I like things a certain way. And if they're not that way, it's hard for me to deal with that. Okay. Sometimes competing. Yeah. So I have to sort of do it that way. And that worked well for me. I'm not sort of I can't wing it. That doesn't work. So that was kind of what we did with him. And that's what I try to do with my own students. Try to look at each show.
Yeah, especially, you know, sharing that with the anxiety or confidence issues, you know, taking it to, you know, little bites at a time, so to say, and getting your confidence up there. So you and your horse are working together instead of, you know, maybe freaking each other out.
It can happen.
It can happen.
Exactly. It can happen. Yeah.
Philip, what about you?
It's basically the same thing with each of the horses that I, you know, plan to show, you know, somewhere around the beginning of the year. You've got like we said, just, you know, plan things out and just hit the small targets, you know? So if a horse is going from first level to second level, well, you know, there's certain things, new moves they have to learn. So you have to introduce those new moves in a way that the horse understands, and you say, okay, I've got it a little bit like this. You know, you can't go from not knowing shoulder in to having a perfect shoulder in overnight. Mm-hmm. So you just break it down, you know? So you have to start with, you know, what's the recipe that's going to bring you to your perfect shoulder in? Let's just start adding ingredients. You know, you're baking a cake. You know what that cake's going to look like. You can taste that cake, but you can't start from, haven't even cooked the batter. You don't even have any batter. You have to, like, here's some flour, you know, here's some butter, here's some sugar, you know? And if you don't carefully think about those ingredients in training a horse, then you're going to end up with a mess, or you're going to end up with holes in the training where, you know, you have a cake, it has no sugar or something like that. Like, and that just comes with experience, and it comes with, you know, having really good advice and having eyes on the ground. And then, you know, something else that we started to do is to have some, we call it like a fake show where we invite a guest and we dress up and that's super helpful to be able to do it at home to a certain level. So, you know, at this point in my career, if I'm going to bring a horse out to a horse show, I expect to get a 70%.
Okay.
Or we're not leaving the farm.
Right.
It's you know, the horse, and, you know, when I compete as a professional, it has to be to a certain level that I can, you know, that I can own, and that is an advertisement for my training, because it's a business. So if at home we invite a judge over and I, you know, we ride through the test, and it can go good, it can go not good, but if I can't hit kind of my expectations, then we're not leaving the farm. And if it takes an extra year, or it takes an extra 2 years or whatever, so we have our goals, but they're not set in stone. Mm-hmm. Because every horse takes its own time, and, you know, and if we do go to a horse show and something happens and the horse freaks out, well, that's horses, that's life. But you know, we really try to set yourself up for success. And again, like, just being able to run through a test with super confidence that it's not a struggle, or it's like, not every other day I can do a shoulder in for a 7 or an 8, or, you know, this week is good and I don't know what next. Like, I have to be so confident in the relationship and that everything's going to work, that then I go to a show, you know. Yeah. And people show for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, some it's like, it's fun, it's a social time, you know, but, you know, for some, you know, for hardcore competitors, for professionals, I think it has to be really a different experience. So, I kind of have an intensity about that. And, you know, that intensity spills over into my lessons, which doesn't always suit everyone, but, I mean, it's just kind of the way I am, right? You know, not every coach can teach every student, and, you know, that's
something you have to learn too, right, Phil? Like,
yeah.
It's just like, you know, not every doctor is going to be right for you. You know, and I think you learn that as a professional, as you get older, and you learn what your sort of standard is, or how you are. And there are some students that don't
Yeah, I used to get really bothered about that, or to try to shape the lessons for what the student wants. And then, you know, that ends up in, you know, just problematic. So, you know, the people, I think the people I work best with are super goal oriented, and they want to compete. We have to take it seriously, and that kind of thing. And the preparation is there, and the discussions about the goals are there, and hitting the targets has to be there, you know, because also I view my students as a reflection of my program and my training. So, you know, if you're not up to a standard, I'm not going to endorse you going to a horse show.
Sounds completely reasonable to me.
I don't know. That's gotten a little bit contentious at times, you know.
Yep.
Like, you know, but it is what it is, and it works, and you know, we're okay.
Yep. No, that's awesome. You've got to be, stand strong in your beliefs and your like you said, your program and the foundational stuff that you put together, because you know, developing those young horses, you are the steward for that horse. You're that horse's advocate. You're bringing them along, I guess I could see that you know, you don't want to be put in the position where you are being a yes man or a yes woman to a client just to make them feel good about themselves. Where you're just like, look, if you want to do this right, you're going to have to do it right.
Yeah.
Put the time in, you know, make the effort, and it's okay not to be hitting benchmarks, you know, but you have to have them. They have to be important to you as well. Right. Not just me, but you know, we all have to be invested in what I consider to be a successful competition experience.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, kind of taking off on that whole idea of the successes, what are your mental approaches to dealing with both the setbacks and the successes? Reese?
So I have a sports psychologist, and I work with her, which is great. I work with her good and bad, so that I have strategies in place. And I think it's great. I started working. I had the opportunity with my first big horse, Casper. It was the first time I sort of worked with a sports psychologist, and which I think is great. I think for me, that's been super helpful. I also have, again, like I talked about before, a pretty small team. So if things aren't going well, I use that team as much when it's not going well as when it is going well. I have a great coach in Scott as well. And there are times when, you know, the thing that works well about our relationship is when I call him, I need him. So I think that's important, right? I'm not going to just cry wolf and like, when I call you, I need something. I think that's important with your coaches, right? My job is to help you develop your horse and your skill. I'm not a psychologist myself, so don't come to me for that. But if I'm calling, so, which is good, because again, there are times when you're competing and you're like, hey, maybe I want to change this, or I think I need to make this little adjustment. What do you think? Should I do it now? Should we do it later? So having the freedom to sort of have that kind of coaching is great. And I think what you learn, and I think we've learned this going to international competitions, is I think you have this idea that every international rider does everything perfect, and they do not. They make mistakes. And I think that was mentally, I thought I have to be perfect. And there's never been 100% in a dressage test ever. So recorded. So we are trying to achieve something that's unachievable in a way. Mm-hmm. So I thought I have to be perfect all the time. And it's like, actually, it's okay to make a mistake. It's how do you recover from your mistake? Like, do you just have a mistake in the changes, or does it become this bleeding mess of mistakes? You know, and if it does, how do we make that not happen again? So I think that's been a really good thing for me, is knowing that there are going to be great times, hard times. They're going to be great times. I celebrate the great times more now, even if it's a little victory. I celebrate it. Yeah. I learned that from Philip.
Yeah, that's what we've started doing. Yeah. Maybe in the last 10 years or so, you know, again, you know, when I was younger, I mean, we all have these huge goals and we feel like we're disappointing ourselves or we're disappointing our horse when we don't meet them or, you know, all of these things. And I just try to have a perspective about it. You know, I think in all sports, you know, the highs are high and the lows are way low, yeah. Way low. And we were just talking this week on our show about how recently or more and more social media can amplify either the highs or the lows. I mean, you can open your Facebook and see, you know, all these wonderful posts from all these people and you didn't have a good day and you feel like shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Or, you know, oh, you know, I had a great show and then I'm posting everything and I'm pretending my life is perfect. And, you know, this is not the reality of horses. It's not reality of life. So, you know, we try to really celebrate even the smallest things, you know. Today, my horse got a flying change, you know, or, you know, I just had a really good feeling in the trot work. And I'm, you know, really can be really happy about that. You know, being, like I said, really focused and goal driven, you tend to forget to do that a little bit because you're just, okay, that's good. Now on the next. And yeah. So it's self-defeating and it's not really fun. And then the other thing is, you know, you have your team of coaches, but you have your team of family and friends and, you know, and all those things. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, I have a horse is in training and his name is Belcanto and he's awesome. And he's been really successful in his career. And, you know, the one year he was like first level champion, you know, 70% all the way through. And then, we decided that he came along that winter and learned everything for third level. So here I am, first show of the year. He's going really well at first level or third level now. He's going to be awesome. Da, 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 da. And we did a fine test. It was okay. And he got mid-60s, you know. And like I said, I go to the show and I want to get 70s and I'm pretty sure that I can confidently do that. There was no big problems, no big mistakes, but it just wasn't a 70% ride. And I'm not one to complain about the judge or, you know, whatever. It was what it was. I looked at the video. I was like, yeah, you know, we did everything. It was a bit of a letdown. And then I went home and I talked to Meredith, my wife, and she said, you know what? It's great. You can't skip it because it was basically skip second level and you can't skip second level and get back to 70%. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, he's still, you know, whatever. And then I had to breathe. I had to let it go. I had to go back the next day and just ride the best test I could and be happy with that. And it was like a 72%.
Wow.
You know, that's a super special horse to be able to do that. But I had put too much pressure on myself and on the horse instead of just saying, it's, you know, let's go out, let's have a horse show. If he gets through everything and I'm happy, like I wasn't happy I was happy with him, but I wasn't happy with the score. And not because of the judge or anything, but I just put so much pressure because he was so successful in the previous season.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of perspective, you know, that your team. And even if, you know, you have parents like Reese and I are blessed with parents that are pretty horsey.
Yeah.
Right. So I've been able to lean on that, you know, lean on my mom and Reese leans on her mom. And I mean, our moms are our moms. I think they're kind of similar in that they love us, but there's no bullshit.
No.
Right. They're just like, Phil, suck it up. You know, kind of suck it up, you know, you don't need to whine and complain, you know, or whatever, you know, when I was growing up and competing as a bratty teenager, basically. So, you know, they're part of the team, but even if you have parents that aren't, they can help you find perspective. And I think there's a lot of resources now with podcasts and books and webinars about the mental health aspect of competing. And I know that we've talked to quite a few people on our podcast about just the mental approach to competing as a professional, competing as an amateur, and life coaching, right? Setting goals. And there's so many resources out there that are so beneficial to the mental aspect, because basically, horse riding is 80% mental and 50% physical,
Yep. Well, and it's like you said, learning to reframe it. You had to go home and reframe what your purpose was in that moment to go back into the ring the next day. And then just talking about the family. I mean, that's one of the things that I had in the back of my mind when I started this podcast, that it's not just about the riders. It's not just about the horses. It's about, yes, the grooms and all the staff and everything else, but it's about the people who are supporting these people in the industry. And I'm a huge believer in that. And yes, like all the shout outs to that support team for sure. Okay.
So amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to like a bit of a funny story. So let me explain this a little bit. So way back when I was riding, and you two might get a giggle out of this because that was so far back that it's at least Canada, Phil. It was like basic 1, 2, 3, and 4. One, two, three, four. Okay, so that's a long time ago. But I think it was my first real show at Medium 2. And I was in the ring and I was rounding the end at C, and I'm heading towards M, and on the show grounds, there was the arena of the property was right there. And this guy walked around the corner with a pool noodle in his hand, and he was waving the pool noodle around. And my horse was like, I am out of here. He beelined it for A, and I heard this little tinkle, 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 like, okay, judge, I get it. I managed to like reel him in before he took a step outside at A. We went right back up the long side. I got him like collected back up. We picked right back up at M, and needless to say, our energy was a lot more elevated. So we did really well in the end of it all. And I think we still ended up placing like fourth. So if we hadn't have screwed up, I think we would have maybe even won that class. But do either of you have a pool noodle story you can share? Something like funny that kind of caught you, that like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
Reese, you got one?
Oh yeah. Well, so my last CDI last month, there was a big storm forecasted to come in. I was like, let's say I went at 3:15. I can't remember exactly the timing. I was like, it won't come in at 3:15. It'll come in a little after. So warming up, I'm getting ready for my Grand Prix special, which is a no joke test. It is very, very difficult. It's fun. I mean, it's so much fun if you have a horse that can do it, but you need all hands on deck basically. And so I go in, I'm in with the five judges and the, the live stream camera, and everyone's having a drink, having a great time. I'm going around the ring and it starts to rain a little bit. And I'm like, all right, we can handle this. I go down the center line and a hurricane basically starts.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still not quite funny yet. I'm not sure if ever.
Yeah, we can tell.
Funny. It's still a little raw. And when I mean it poured. And I'm thinking, I'm going through this and I'm like, oh my God, like stuff is blowing everywhere. The rain is coming sideways. I am not exaggerating. Poor little Bingo's like, and he went and he did it. There was a lot to be said about what happened. I mean, I had to pee off and he like turned his tush toward the wind. I mean, it was awful. And I just said, keep smiling, keep going. Like, I was like, in my mind, I'm like, they're gonna stop me. And there was I don't think there was any lightning. I don't even know. The rain was coming sideways. It was awful. I had to fight through it. And I think actually at the end of the day, I mean, was it sort of heartbreaking that it was during a CDI? Yes, like, ugh. But a lot of people saw it. On my way out, we got a standing ovation and people like cheered his name, and it was, and I know that horse can go and he will go. And he said, Mom, I'm going to try and I'm going to do this. And my coach Scott and Sarah Turi, we call her Bingo's nanny, my assistant. They didn't move. Everyone else is ducking for cover, and I look over and they're still there in the wind, in the rain, and yeah, like I said, it's still not funny. I'm not laughing yet, but it feels like it was raining a little. I'm like, you can't actually see it on the live stream. Like, it's just not, it doesn't do it justice on how bad it was. So that was recent. Like I said, the positives were, you know, it was really good for my relationship with my horse. And he was so good and kind and, again, helped my confidence. I mean, I would never have been like, yeah, I want to go out and ride it like that. Yeah. With stuff blowing everywhere. But again, you know, I came out of that experience like, okay, now I'm okay. We rode literally through a hurricane. Like, we got this. So I think overall, it probably was a good thing. So.
That is awesome. What about you, Phil?
So this might have been 10 or 15 years ago. I was riding a Friesian stallion and we went to a show, and I think it was going fourth level or St. George, you know, something of a complicated test. And the show ring was set up where just behind it, there was a wooded area, like a little forest or whatever, right? So, you know, and this is not the first time I've shown at the showgrounds, and, you know, all the horses kind of keep one eye, one ear kind of in that wooded area because they can't see through it, or it's just unfamiliar to them, right? We're used to showing where there's kind of an expanse of space to look at and to see, you know, other horses and whatever, but this is kind of a unique location. And the judge's booth is set up, so there's wooded area, then the judge's booth, then the ring. And I don't think there's room to ride around the back of the judge's booth. So you go in between the judge's booth and, you know, yeah, that's pretty normal and whatever, but just at that end, horses are always a little looky, right? A little bit aware of that. And then, but my Friesian, anyone has ever ridden a Friesian, they are just relaxed, cool dudes for the most part. So I'm not worried about it, you know, and if he gets a little extra energy, I can kind of use it. So that's a plus for me, right?
Yep.
So I'm going around the ring, I enter, and then I'm doing my test. And then coming away from the wooded area, I can, you know, kind of see the other competitors or whatever, but he spooks a little. And this is like, this never happens when I'm training, whatever. You could set a bomb off. This horse is fine with it, right? He's just really steady Eddie. And like I said, he's a little late on the lazy side. So I was, you know, kind of scoots and whatever. And then I turn, so that's down the long side or across the diagonal, whatever, I don't know. And I turn across the short side at the far end. And as I make the next corner towards the judge or the wooded area, there is about six or seven turkeys that have shown up at the end of the ring to just mill around and see what's going on. Spectators, turkey spectators. And at this point, they're pretty quiet. But you can kind of see, you know how the boy turkeys, they puff themselves up and, you know, kind of fan their, right? They weren't talking yet, but I can see what's going on with these turkeys and I know what's going to happen. And the horse is like, what the heck is that? Put it nicely. What the heck is that? And I'm like, I got no idea, but just stay with me, buddy. We've got, I think, I, you know, maybe halfway through that St. George test, and it's a long one. It's a long, we got a lot of stuff to do. And you know how they put everything up at the judge's end, you know, you got your two half pirouettes and you got, you know, you head up for the changes and everything. And, you know, bless his heart. I mean, he's trying to pay attention the best he can, but yeah, I think, you know, that whole test ended in not a complete disaster of the, you know, I ride quite a few horses that would just run the other direction. They did not want to see any of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you know, like how you're supposed to do the half pirouette and then the change at sea and, you know, in the other way, like that, none of that was happening. That turkey experience.
Pretty funny. I gotta say that probably beats the pool noodle. That would
That's better.
They didn't
that's
go
funny.
Anywhere.
Mine was great.
So I finished the test, and then the show staff were like, get a few people together, and we're herding the turkeys back to the back to the wooded area. But I mean, at least they had a reason to be, kind of eyeing that.
Yeah, that's fun. That is a good.
That's a good one. That would happen.
That's much better. Mine is a sad story.
Well, I wasn't really happy about it at the time,
But now you can giggle about it at least.
Yeah.
Never had that happen again, and I hope it never happened. Like, it will never happen again.
Yeah.
One time turkeys.
All right, you guys. Okay, so I have one last question for you. What kind of goals have you guys set up for this upcoming riding season, for yourselves and for your students? Philip?
Okay. Well, I have, three horses who are going to show at least fourth level this year. That's the goals, right?
Okay.
Maybe only one of them does it, but I'm working towards getting certified, and I need a couple of scores at fourth level, so that should be my or just getting to a horse show, I think, at this point in the pandemic perhaps. But if I think beyond that towards some real goals, I'm really blessed to have trained these three horses myself. They've been in the program. They've shown, all the way up and, up until this point, have been successful. I'm really pleased. And so I'm kind of really excited about being on that verge of having, one or two or maybe all three, going to Pre-St. George. That's one of the benchmarks, right? I've shown there before, but these are, really have a fantastic, fantastic group of horses. And then I think everybody else who's, the students and stuff we're trying not to set expectations for horse shows too high. We have to accept that perhaps that's not a reality. So we're having fun training. We've got some other, some riding goals that we can achieve that aren't necessarily horse show related or the horse show related, but not putting all of our eggs in that basket actually happening or however we need to see that. But if we have just more horse shows just at home with them inviting over a judge friend or something like that, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I think through this pandemic, it's just roll with the punches one day at a time.
And as crappy as it's been, I think this is probably all, if we can all look back at it, have really actually helped us learn to roll with the punches a little bit, change our expectations, not be so set in our ways, learn to adjust, adapt, pivot, whatever you want to call it, learn more about ourselves, our horses. Yeah. What about you, Reese?
Yeah. So, it's very different here where I am in my state. 70% of people have been vaccinated now. Wow. So something like, maybe it's a little high, but a lot. So, so it's very different where I am from where you guys are. So I had my second vaccination. So we're sort of ready to, move forward, which is great. We're still being careful as we can. So, but I made a choice in Florida. I didn't want to be traveling a ton this summer, just because, again, I wanted to be a little bit cautious about that. So Bingo is halfway through his qualifications for the national championships. In the US, we have two championships. We have the USCF Festival of Champions that happens in August. And so I would really, really love to get Bingo there. We have two more shows where we need to get going on that. He started well, so that's looking pretty good. But we've got to keep moving forward with that. And then I'd like to take him. There's the USDF championships that actually happens in my town. So the national finals are here in Lexington. So our regionals are actually here in Lexington as well. So I'm looking forward to showing at the regionals with him. And then my second horse, my small tour horse, he is very much developing this year. I showed him yesterday. It was a recognized show, but it was a schooling show. So, which we don't get that opportunity to sort of go in the ring in school very often. So we had a little discussion yesterday. Hopefully he learned a few things. I could be a little more free to kind of make some corrections in there. I think sometimes it's good to get in the ring and not have it be live streamed and all the people. And it was a really small show. So Big Mike had to go in the ring and behave a little bit, which is good for him. So I am hoping to get him to the regional finals and the national finals at Pre-St. George and Intermediate One. And then I have a lot of students right now going, all kinds of goals, from bronze medals to making a national championship, literally all levels. I have from training level to, I have a U25 rider. So literally all levels going through. And again, we're just starting. A lot of them just started yesterday on their competitions. So kind of juggling around where they're going to go and how much and that kind of stuff we're working on now. So that'll be fun to see them sort of rock through their goals as well. So we'll see, but
we're awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. It's great to set goals. It's great to, you know, strive for them and make the plans. And yes, if you have to adjust, you have to adjust. But yeah, it sounds like all of your students between the two of you are in very good hands.
Most of the time, if we've had nice snacks and I'm not grumpy.
Well, you guys, I cannot thank, this has been such, you know, so exciting for me to have the two famous Dressage Talk radio hosts.
So, we never thought that would be said, did we, Phil?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. So I am going to put all of your info in the show notes, if you don't mind, contact information for both of you, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. I'll put of course.
The Dressage Talk radio.
It's so we're at the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network.
Yep.
Horse Radio Network's also great to take a peek at. We have tons of shows on the network and we would love that. And our emails are easy. I'm Reese at Horse Radio Network and .com, and Philip is Philip at Horse Radio Network.com.
One L.
The Dressage Radio Show, it's one of many in this network, right? Correct. Yeah.
Whatever you're into, or even if you want to explore the driving or horsemanship, or you know, they have a show for it. They have hosts for it who are really great, and the whole network is really a great family and a great community. I love it.
Well, I can't thank you enough. Thank you. So yeah, you guys have a great night, a great season, and hopefully we can be in touch again.
Sounds great. Thank you.
So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up, hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So, until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.